Welcome to I'm Coming Home by Clifton Chenier. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson. This week we will be talking about homeless veterans, how to change the prison system, and a tribute to the late Sunshi Ali, the founder and guiding light of Soul Vision, an organization located right here in Los Angeles. We have with us in the studio Jeff Norman of the Veterans Project, Shirley Simmons from Soul Vision, and also on the line, Sister C, Charlotte Farrell. How you doing, Charlotte?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, just fine. You and Shirley are part of the original Soul Vision, what Sunshi called the frontline poets. Sunshi had a message for young people, especially those caught up in the gang life. He was a teacher, and he would say to me often that he wanted Soul Vision to be an organization that could help guide our young people. Now, I would like to play a great song by Sunshi entitled Homeboy, and then we would come back and continue our discussion.
Okay.
Homeboy.
There's only one blood, cause it ain't no sense in us trampling on the stones. It's us, down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were often memories. Fathers were not favored from the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme, for he, brothers, could dream. Your mama ain't no saint, your daddy died in a shallow stream, but your uncle Dr. King did have a dream, my brother. And what is your real excuse? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Free love and sex ain't nothing but a game. Don't never last, try hope. Take a chance on love, register to vote. Money ain't everything, but you could buy her a ring. Listen to the little blackbird sing. Buy you a record of a yard bird with wings. Get into the swing of things. Homeboy. Earn some tenderness for a change. Home is where your history is, and it's not too late. Your uncle Dr. King wrote a book called Why We Can't Wait. Birmingham was yesterday. The mad dogs came to call on your mother's mother and sister. Your granddad had the blackened boots. You know what I'm saying, cuz it ain't but one blood. It's called fight for freedom now.
Homeboy, love, love, love. Homeboy, fight for
homeboy. Freedom. Your mama ain't no saint. Your daddy died in yesterday's freedom jazz dance. Your sister's on the streets doing it with whomever she meets. Everybody you know is weak. Dope is strong. Women are free. Ain't nobody in school. Homeboy, listen to me, I know who you are.
Dying
I seen
in the
you up
streets.
Close and from afar. Listen to a poet tell you of a
have
race that used to be strong.
Me.
Now ain't no poet singing,
homeboy.
And what's going on?
Homeboy.
We used to work for a living. A nickel was a nickel, a dime a dime. Waters were deep, rivers rose. But nobody froze when it got cold. Homeboy, take time out and think of who you really are. Don't die off a dozen and one demons. Live for your mama and your daddy too. They had trouble and so were you. But live and let live. Take hold of your history and dream. Take hold of your history and dream. Take hold of your history and dream. Many thousand dark voices still sing. Homeboy.
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 Homeboy by Sunchi Ali, the founder and guiding spirit of Soul Vision. We're back with Shirley Simmons in the studio and Sister C, Charlotte Farrow, on the line. Charlotte, how did you get involved with Soul Vision?
Well, when I came here from Toronto in 1990, I went to a reading out of the Midnight Bookstore in Santa Monica, and Sunji and Dadisi were there along with people from the Black Writers Association, and they heard me do a poem and invited me to come to a Soul Visions event. And at that time they were using a place called the Upper Room, and Dadisi and Sunji used to use a tag team where one of them would start to talk to you about the next upcoming event and the other would have the paperwork to sign you up for Soul Vision. So pretty much I think I met them in the summer, and by the fall of 1990 I was active with Soul Visions.
Now tell us something about your basic memory about Sunji.
Well, he always invited new people and often people who may have never written a poem to come out among the featured poets. And it was kind of a paradigm shift because a lot of the readings that were happening in the early 90s, they just had the main line or the best poets as featured poets. But it's kind of a tradition that from the beginning, Sunji always incorporated some newer poets or younger poets, and whether they were stuttered, were shy, or couldn't remember, he would encourage them and put them up among the featured poets for the particular evening.
We're looking forward to hearing you coming out on the 18th, mm-hmm. and be one of the MCs for the show.
Okay.
Shirley, you want to say something to Charlotte?
Just want to give her my blessing and tell her to keep up the good work, because she is also helping keeping Soul Vision alive.
Yeah, with the events that we have through Mustard Seed Ministries, which is a health and creative arts ministry, we always work together so that Soul Vision's people, or there'd be a spot or area within Mustard Seed's events for frontline poets, and likewise incorporating. Sometimes people would go to a Soul Visions event or a Mustard Seed event and they'd say, well, I feel like I've been to church. And that was because the spirit that Sunji had and spread over to people involved was not to have poetry as something where people just let any kind of thing fall out of their mouth. You had to be respectful. They certainly didn't censor people with regard to ideas, but it really was a forum for helping people learn to build and use poetry to express our culture, as something to teach, and as mm-hmm. something to lift up the community. So I'm looking forward to keeping that alive along with Shirley, and we have some exciting new things that are going to be happening in the fall and upcoming year that have contests on the style that, you know, we used to have contests, and where we invite other people to include their work in an anthology or in a recording.
Okay, thank you very much, Charlotte, and thank you for taking the time, and have a good evening.
Okay, thank you so much for doing this. I look forward to hearing your regular programs.
Okay, Charlotte Farrell, Sister C. Now, Shirley, tell us about the event planned for September the 18th at the Exchange.
Well, this will be the fourth event put on since Sunji passing. It's going to be held September the 18th at 1 p.m. down at the Exchange, and the address there is 114 West 5th Street. And it's going to be a celebration of life. Sunji Ali, even though he's passed, it's still we're going to celebrate. That's what he liked for us to do, is celebrate. The event is going to have the regional frontline poets. I would like to say a few names.
Yeah, tell us some of the poets who would be here.
We're going to have Richard Jones, one of the very first line poet. He's doing great. He's doing plays and still has books out there that he's pushing, and he's doing great with the books. He just did a play recently on breast cancer. We're having Tanya Bird. She's a pretty feisty woman that really let it all hang out. What can I say about Tanya? And the original Isaac Clay, not the singer, but he's our original, and he's fantastic. Sings and he does very, very deep poetry. Mosetta Rose, she's a lady that likes to do poetry that is more history, like Sunji liked back in the home days. Rocky Solomon, one of the original Soul Vision person. He's a good poet, musician, and he sings. Tanook, she's definitely one of the first poets. She's doing a lot nowadays in the community. She's opening up her own theater, drama, and singing center in Englewood very, very soon. Jamela Holloway, a very spiritual, inspirational poet. Donna Bokar, sometimes I mispronounce that, but he knows who he is.
Donald Bokar.
Bokar, all right. He's a very eccentric African-type poet who played in a movie here or there, and he did some very good drama. And myself, Shirley Simmons, a.k.a. Isis. I'm from the East Coast, so I bring my East Coast style inspirational poetry, and I like to do a little bit of children poems here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Donald Bokar, he's the one that wrote the screenplay for South Central.
All right.
Yeah, excellent movie. Okay, thank you, Shirley. We will be hearing from you in the voices from the Ether portion of the show. Now, at this time, I would like to turn it over to Ms. Earlene Anthony for our community calendar.
This is the community calendar for the month of September. Sunday, September the 18th, from 1 to 4 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran, Original Soul Visions, and the Frontline Poets will present A Celebration of Life. This is a tribute to the late Sunji Ali. Will be hosted by Melvin Ishmael Johnson, Shirley Simmons, and Sister C. Charlotte Farrell. We're asking all the poets who knew Sunji Ali to come together and do some open mic and just remember his life and time and just come out and have a good time. This is a free event. We do accept donations. Refreshments will be served. The location, The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street. For more information on this event, you can contact 323-850-4436. Wednesday, September the 21st, from 6 to 8 p.m., the Urban Community Impact, presented by USC Interfaith Peace Organization and UUC Student Fellowship, will be having an event. And the topic of discussion will be law and public advocacy. The location is the USC Campus Fellowship Hall, United University Church, 817 West 34th Street. That's at the corner of Jefferson and Hoover. It's a free event, and dinner will be provided. For more information, you can contact Catherine Schofield at 213-748-0209. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send your information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And once again, our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. And now back to our host.
Okay, we have with us in the studio tonight Jeff Norman. He is the Executive Director of the Veterans Project. Jeff, tell us a little about your background and how you got into this kind of work.
Well, I've always been really passionate about freedom of expression issues, and in the build-up to the Iraq War, when it was being debated, so to speak, about whether or not we should invade, I became outraged at how some very credible people who were against the invasion were being silenced. So I thought about how I could help, and in the past I'd organized some fundraisers for people who were victims of censorship and that sort of thing. So I decided I would help some of these folks. And I'm talking about Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons inspector, and some of the former CIA analysts who were speaking out. And I helped organize some events for them and started booking interviews for them, just basically helping them get the word out. And through doing that work, we had events around the country. And on my travels, I kept meeting over and over again soldiers who were suffering from PTSD, active duty as well as veterans, just everywhere we went, and plus we were hearing about this. And so I decided to try to do something about it, and that's why I founded the Veterans Project. And the idea is to help veterans adjust to civilian life.
Mm-hmm. So, Jeff, what is the mission statement and goal of the Veterans Project?
That's it, to help them adjust to civilian life. When we first started it, the idea was specifically to focus on getting rid of the stigma that's attached to PTSD. So it was basically a public awareness effort. But the mission has been expanding as we get into it. We realize we have to get more hands-on, and it also it involves more than just a veteran's emotional state. It also involves jobs and housing. So we're really in the process of evolving into something much more than a public awareness organization devoted only to PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little about the lawsuit and the present status of the lawsuit on the West LA campus, the Veterans campus?
Yeah, that's an amazing situation, an amazing opportunity. The original land, we're referring to about 400 acres of land in Brentwood on the border of Westwood, where the West Los Angeles campus of the VA is located. And that property was deeded to the United States government back in 1888. And in the deed, it was stipulated that the land must be used only for the care and permanent housing of disabled veterans. And the amount of permanent housing that's on that property right now and for years is exactly zero. There is none. There is a little bit of transitional housing, but no permanent housing. And not only that, they've been using the land for things that have absolutely nothing to do with veterans. Various corporations, such as Enterprise Car and a company that does laundry for the hotels. There's a school there. There's two theaters there. And none of this has anything at all to do with veterans. And also, the deals are secret. Nobody knows how much money is being paid to get the use of this land. Nobody knows where the money is going. It's all a secret. And this has been the case for years. And I became aware of this about a year or so ago, and I couldn't believe that such a scandal was being ignored completely. And finally, this past June, the ACLU filed a lawsuit. And I think this is going to be a real game changer, a historic lawsuit. And it's going to be a class action suit on behalf of veterans. And it's really got two main arguments to it. One is the land use dispute, which I just mentioned. But also, even apart from that, they're suing the VA for failing to provide veterans with services to which they're entitled. The logic is sort of like if you don't have a ramp for wheelchairs at certain buildings. In the same way that buildings have to have a ramp, you've got to give the veterans access to the services they need. Some of them are just unfit to even get on a bus and travel to the VA. And so it's an interesting two-pronged lawsuit, and it's really energized a lot of activists and people who care about veterans. With that in mind, we're in the process, and I know you're involved, Melvin, is forming a coalition to help come up with some specific housing solutions. The lawsuit doesn't really specify what would be a fulfillment of the VA's obligation. It only says that they're failing to do so. So those of us in the activist and veterans advocacy community are filling that void, and we're going to be holding a series of public forums in the next few months, and we've got some really good allies on board to help with this. For example, Clifford Beers Housing, they have a great track record developing housing for people with mental disabilities. There's an architect named John Fisher, who's famous for developing theaters as well as housing, who's agreed to help us. We have two great mental health organizations. One is called Give an Hour, and the other is called the Soldiers Project. And they both have pretty much the same mission, which is to provide free and confidential mental health counseling to veterans and their families. So with the help of the community and these experts, we are going to put together a plan for some solutions, and that would include on the actual property as well as on other locations throughout the Los Angeles area.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. I think we got Mary Louise Harrison on the line.
Okay,
let's move on then. Jeff will be a panelist at the Homeless Veteran Forum at the Exchange, located at 114 West 5th Street in downtown Los Angeles, Sunday, October the 23rd, 2011 at 4 o'clock p.m. tentatively. Now, this forum will seek to assess the needs of homeless veterans and seek to come up with a solution to the problems of homeless veterans. Our entire show on Monday, October the 17th, will deal with homeless veterans. Now, Jeff, I would like to ask you one final question before we get Mary Louise on the line. What do you think is the main reason veterans end up homeless in one of the richest nations in the history of the world?
War, apathy, and fear and denial. Now, I better clarify who I'm pinning those labels on. Of course, war would be the veterans themselves. I mean, that's what puts them, that's the cost of war is coming back. And I mean, it's in varying degrees, but I've heard it said before, and I really believe that everybody who's in a combat situation comes back with some form of PTSD. It's just a matter of degrees. Nobody comes back the same person. So that's why so many veterans are struggling. As far as why we don't have the solution, that's the rest of society. It's apathy, it's fear, it's guilt. People don't want to really look at the problem. It's the whole military-industrial complex, which is what causes and why this whole situation is perpetuating as it is. And people don't want to look at that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we got Mary Louise on the line.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Mary Louise, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, wonderful. Mary Louise is over there at the Union Rescue Mission, I think, getting ready to start the homeless count. And we want to talk to you about a few things. I know Jeff have a few questions.
Sure.
I want to know about how do they count veterans within the overall homeless count? Is it a separate process that they use?
No. Actually, what this is going to be is a vulnerability survey. They're going out, we're going out over the next couple of nights to talk with people and to find out information to try and identify the most vulnerable people on Skid Row. And we're looking to see for people who have been on the streets more than 6 months, who have a chronic mental illness and substance abuse, along with a medical condition, or are older than 60 years old, or who have renal disease or other life-threatening conditions. And the goal of this is that there's funds to house 450 people within the Skid Row area by 2013. And a lot of the questions that we're asking are designed to identify veterans, to identify what period they served in, to find out whether or not they've been honorably discharged, and to get a release of information so that the Veterans Administration can follow up with these vets and offer them different housing programs like VASH program and medical services, mental health services that they might need.
I see. Okay, Jeff, do you have any questions?
Yeah, it's sort of a follow-up to what you were mentioning. It has to do with the whole idea of separating veterans from other homeless people. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day who thinks it's important for the programs to be separate. This is actually Rick Reyes, who's our director of military outreach, and he last year he went undercover pretending he was homeless, so that he could check into a facility and observe how it was run. And one of the things he observed was that the, at least in this particular facility, homeless veterans were mixed in with the rest of the homeless veteran with the rest of the homeless population. And he felt that this is not the right way to go about it. So I'm wondering if you have any opinion about that.
Well, I think you have to look at where the veterans choose to go. If, you know, there are a lot of veterans, and when I used to work in the Skid Row area, Hope Row area, who wanted nothing to do with the Veterans Administration. They wanted no services and no assistance from that, you know, pool of resources. So they were using the different resources that were available down there. I think that veterans, as a veteran myself, you know, I have to say, deserve all of the assistance that's available through the VA administration. And I think that at times they don't go far enough. However, it's up to the veterans themselves. If they want to go ahead and to access the VA services, that's wonderful. If they don't want anything to do with the VA, if they found the whole military experience to be something they want to move on beyond, then they absolutely should be entitled to use the services that are available outside of the VA. So,
Mary Louise, let me ask you a question. What do you think is the main reason that veterans fail to utilize the facilities out at the...
they didn't have a good experience when they were in the military and they just want to put it behind them. Maybe they went to the VA services and they didn't quite get what they needed. Maybe they felt like they should have gotten access to a service and, you know, they weren't offered that in the way or in the timeline that they wanted. I mean, the military, you know, the VA is a wonderful resource, but not, you know, no one organization can meet everybody's needs all the time, you know?
Okay, Jeff, you have another question for Mary Louise?
How can somebody who wants to get a voucher go about getting it now? What's the process? How difficult is it, and what do they need to do?
The HUD-VASH voucher program.
Yeah.
If you live here in the Los Angeles area, you should go to the West LA VA and go to building 206 in the screening clinic, and they can go ahead and screen you and get you started in the process. Another way you can access is if you're already in another case management program, you can ask them to do the screening, and they'll go ahead and do the screening and get you set up for an appointment. If you go to the website, I think it's glava.gov, and that's Golf Lima Alpha Victor Alpha .gov. They have a link there to a national homeless helpline, and you can click on that, and it's like a 1-800 number, and again, you can do the screening there, and they will get you in for an appointment. To qualify for the HUD-VASH program, you need to be a veteran, you need to be able to use the VA medical services, and you cannot be a lifetime, have been on a lifetime sexual offender list. As long as you meet those three criteria, you can get a voucher. And it takes about 3 to 4 months, and they walk you all the way through the process and give you case management and follow-up for a year afterwards to make sure that you're successful in your housing.
Okay, can I ask one more question?
Yes. Do we have time?
Okay, I'm sorry. I just was curious. Is there a fixed fee that one would have to pay for rent once they get a voucher, or is there a range?
Well, it's a Section 8 voucher, so you're going to be paying a portion of the rent based on your income. I think it's like 30% of your income goes towards paying the rent. And it's a lifetime voucher, you know, Section 8 voucher. You can keep it for as long as you keep it. And the way that it works is that they put so many vouchers aside for veterans. And once you get the voucher and you've had it for a year, they change you to a regular Section 8 voucher. And that voucher comes back so that they can use it as another veteran.
Okay. Thanks, Mary Lou.
Hey, thanks very much, Mary Lou. You say, Mary Lou, what is your title?
I would rather not talk about that.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Mary Louise, for all of that information, and we will be back in touch with you.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. Jeff, one more thing. Can you mention, before we close out, about the class that Roy teaches on Wednesday?
Oh, yeah. One of the things we do at the Veterans Project is we mentor veterans and we train them. And our specific focus is show business and the media profession. And one of the things we do is every Wednesday night, Roy Eisenstein, a very successful director, producer, writer, whom I've worked with in the past, donates his time and services, and he teaches a class called Acting for Veterans Workshop. And it's a Wednesday night in West L.A. From 7 to 10 p.m. And if you want more information, you can check our website, which is theveteransproject.org.
Thank you very much, Jeff, the director of the Veterans Project.
Thank you, Melvin.
Mm-hmm. Now, in our Voices from the Community section, we're going to hear a community forum that was held at the Exchange on Sunday, August the 21st, 2011, to discuss how to change the prison system. The panelists was Fonji Baruti, Kevin Michael Key, and Keith James. We will listen to part one this week, part two next week. Part one is a little over 20 minutes, so let's move to the community forum, how to change the prison system.
Thank you very much for coming out. We're going to get into our panel discussion, which we're talking about the prison system, how to change the prison system. And we're going to start from this end. I'm going to ask each one of the panel. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson. I'm going to moderate the panel today. I'm going to ask each one of the panelists to spend about a minute telling about the cell, the organization they represent. And then we're going to go back around, and each one of the panelists would have a 10-minute presentation, and then we're going to open it up to you for discussion. Starting.
My name is Fania Baruti. I'm an organizer for organization called All of Us and None, which is also a project of a new way of life reentry. And my boss, she has 5 transitional homes for women, and we also are part of the FICPM, which is the Formerly Incarcerated People's Movement, and I'll share more of that with you later.
My name is Kevin Michael Key. I'm a Skid Row advocate. I live and work in this community. I got clean and sober in this community. I'm a former criminal defense attorney. I don't think I need that. And what I'm representing today, Critical Resistance Los Angeles, which is a prison industrial complex abolitionist organization. We don't think, just like you couldn't reform the institution of slavery, you can't reform the modern day equivalent of slavery, which is the prison industrial complex. That doesn't just mean the prisons themselves. That means all the feeder systems. I'm also here representing an organization that goes by the acronym CURB, C-U-R-B. That stands for Californians United for a Responsible Budget. All of Us and None are part of that. And I will talk about that. And also about realignment, prison realignment, and so that's what I'm doing here today. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Keith James. I'm not here representing an organization as such. I'm a revolutionary activist. I distribute Revolution newspaper, and especially over the past, say, month and a half. When there's been a prison hunger strike.
Can you use the mic? Please.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you hear the first part?
Nothing.
Okay. My name is Keith James. I'm a revolutionary activist. I'm not here representing any organization as such. I distribute Revolution newspaper. I'll speak of it. I distribute Revolution newspaper. And one of the reasons I think that Melvin invited me here today to speak is that over the past month and a half, people here might know that there has been a prison hunger strike in the California state prison system, extremely significant, and I hope we get into it today. I mean, maybe another reason is that this paper has been, there was an effort to ban this paper at the Pelican Bay State Prison in 2009 and 2010, and there was a major political and legal battle to overturn the ban of this newspaper. The paper goes into the prison system, 1,000 subscribers across the United States, 50 in Pelican Bay State Prison. It's having a tremendous effect among prisoners, including prisoners in the security housing units at Pelican Bay.
Okay, thank you, Keith. And I think they won't, the audience wants you to use the mic Okay, so right now we're going to go into our 10-minute presentation. Before we get into that, let me just mention a few little comments that I would like for us to get off into for the three panelists to think about and deal with. The first point is, what would it take to get an educational system in place to retrain prisoners to re-enter the community? You know, like find a job. I hope you have a chance to touch on that. Also, what is the most pressing need for people coming out of prison? Touch on that. Also, how can the community affect change in the prison system? Okay, first, Fanja Baruti is going to make a 10-minute presentation. Fanja.
Go, baby.
There were some deep questions to be answered. The first thing that I know that needs to be done, and which we're doing with the formerly incarcerated people's movement, formerly incarcerated convicted people's movement, is that we just had a meeting here in Los Angeles and watched at the WLCAC with brothers and sisters from across the country. We're having a gathering on November the 2nd. And what we're doing across this nation is we're asking for ban the box, which is for employers to take off the app on the application, have you ever been convicted of a felon? And that's been going real well across this country. We just got that established in Compton. The first implementation was July 1st. This movement that we have a platform that speaks to who we are and what we do. And one of the things that we're doing is when we talk about community development, one of our statements is this: we state clearly that our pain should not be used for economic gain. Prisons have been considered as economic development projects for the communities where they are built, often in rural areas far from I actually was going to go off the top of my head on most of this, but I don't know why I'm nervous, because I'm used to speaking
right?
I'm used to speaking in front of audiences.
That's right.
Often from urban centers where most people are arrested. A major aspect to the development of a human being going into the prison system is that inside there are some conditions, such as what the hunger strike was started from, that is considered torture. When we talk about education, when we talk about vocational training, they don't want us to have that. They don't want us to be smarter than what we are. They want the conditions inside to be still oppressing. When the worst thing that they possibly could ever have done in the prison system was give TVs, there's less studying going on. So one of the things that we try to put in the minds of those that's inside right now is to begin to educate themselves and read. That is very important. This formerly incarcerated people's movement is also, we're working, our main objective is to restore our civil and human rights. We deal with policies. I just left a meeting today with Assemblywoman Holly Mitchell, and she's dealing with some bills on expungement, on realignment, and education that speaks to how prisons are not just deteriorating the minds of the people, but when you look at how much time these young brothers and sisters are getting today, it's ridiculous. 400 years, 66 years of life. You know, just ridiculous time. And so the things that we can do that I believe is to formulate together and really have time to know what's going on and to begin to write those letters and send those emails and those everything that you can to our legislators who have the power to do something about change. On the 23rd of this month, there's going to be busload, carload, vanloads of people going down to Sacramento for a hearing on this torture that's going on in our prison system. When it comes down to employment for when they come home, one of the things that has to be done is that we have to make a way for them. I'm involved with an organization called Repower LA, where we're tackling the DWP, which 40% of their employees will be retiring. And we're saying that those jobs need to go to people of color. We're saying that those jobs need to go to formerly incarcerated people. And we've been pushing real hard for that. So that's going on right now. All of us are none. In Los Angeles is really, really pushing hard for Peace and Justice Summit that's coming up in October on the 26th. And what it is that we have a panel of legislators and we have our audience that will speak to them upon specific demands that we're talking about, all the way from housing, food stamps, and education, employment. These issues say to the people, these issues are, excuse me, I got a headache. I'm kind of sick, but let's move on. These issues that we are demanding of these people are things that they can do something about. And we're saying that we're holding you responsible. We're also pushing for 1 million new voters. We're teaching brothers and sisters who are formerly incarcerated how to vote, what they need to be reading, and how they need to be reading and understanding the laws. And then we're also sending a message to the Democratic National Convention that you have to deal with urban policy. Obama grew up in urban policy, but guess what? He don't have no urban policy in the White House right now. And so these are the things that us formerly incarcerated people are doing that we need support on. We need everybody's support on how we can make our lives in our communities better. As a formerly incarcerated person, it took my determination to want to change. But some people don't have specific support systems in place that will help them along. And so this is what we do. Our organization is one that, we'll tackle anything, especially if it's unjust. There was another question
Well, we can deal with that later. How can the community affect change in the prison system? You dealt with that, which is good. All right, thank you very much, honey. And also mentioned that you do have information on the table about the organization, all of us have known. Now we're going to move to our brother Kevin Mike. Oh, yeah, we're going to get our question and answer after each one of the panelists make their 10-minute presentation, and then we're going to dabble into the question and answer. Kevin Mike Key.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Is that all right for you?
Yeah.
What you doing?
Yeah.
All right. You know, I got a big mouth, so y'all don't hear me. You know? In fact, I used to hear my big mouth right across the street. That's why I smoke up my law license, all right? As I said, I'm part of the Skid Row community. I'm a Skid Row advocate. I got to admit, I'm also part of the Skid Row LAPD. How about that?
Yeah.
Get out of here. That was the setup. It's the Los Angeles Poverty Department, which is a Skid Row-based theater troupe. And we just completed a performance piece called State of Incarceration. It was based on people's personal experiences with inside the belly of the beast. And what was really ironic about the performance, which we performed, we brought the audience into these bunk beds. So you sat on the bunk, we actually brought you to try and recreate the prison experience. And just like the prison experience, although we only had room for 60 people, it was 30 double bunks, so that's like 60 people. Just like the prison system, each and every night, it got more and more and more crowded. I mentioned realignment. Realignment is the governor's plan to reduce the prison population. He didn't reduce the prison population because he wanted to. He was forced to reduce the prison population because first a federal three-judge panel and then the United States Supreme Court held that conditions within our prisons were so bad that they amounted to, that the medical and mental health treatment amounted to cruel and unusual punishment. As a result, they have to reduce the prison population. Do they have to reduce it to 50%? Do they have to reduce it to 70%, 90%, 100%? Hell no. They have to reduce it to 137%, which means that there's still going to be overcrowded dens of iniquity, right? And that's what they subject our people to, our mothers, sisters, brothers, family members, loved ones. This is what they're going. So when we talk of education, there's lots of educating going on there as to man's inhumanity to man. That's why what critical resistance talks about, we talk about a vision of a world where we no longer lock up people in cages, lock up men and women in cages in the name of justice. That ain't no justice. And so right now,
okay, that's part one of our voices from the community section. That was Kevin Michael Key speaking. He's talking about how to change the prison system. And we have part two next week where we'll pick up where Kevin Michael Key left off. And we hear the other panelists, Keith James and the Q&A section. Now, in our last section for today, we're going to turn it over from our voices from the ether portion of the show.
In classical thought, the four elements, earth, water, air, and fire, frequently occur. Sometimes a fifth, ether, a fifth element that which is beyond the material world. Tonight, the Qumran Report brings you voices from the ether, Miss Shirley Simmons and Mr. Melvin Ishmael Johnson. We'll start off tonight with a short poem by Melvin Ishmael Johnson. It's all about 9/11.
The name of this poem is 9/11 and a Cry for Help. It's your fault that 9/11 happened. Does anybody care where eagles dare? Mad men's at the control, seeking destruction for all like a 9/11 call. A ball of confusion, echoes of the cross, the crescent, and the six-point star. Tearing up the world near and far, talking about peace. A piece of this, a piece of that, the oneness of God. Have you forgotten about that? This is a mad, mad world. This world is angry and people are going mad. Seeking destruction for all like a 9/11 call. A cry for help. Does anybody care where eagles dare? This world is angry and people are going mad. People are mad at all those ex-revolutionaries who forgot about the revolution. The revolution of the mind this time, a high-tech revolution. I'm mad as hell about 9/11. Mad at the hijackers who hijacked the mind. Get high off this, get high off that. Sex, money, and drugs, that's where it's at. I'm mad at the hijackers. They hijacked the prices so I can't eat. Hijacked the rent, leaving me homeless with no place to sleep. Hijackers! Hijacking all the time. They hijack the religion with idol worshiping concepts. Hijack the history books and give it to somebody else. Hijack us. Hijacking all the time. It's your fault that 9/11 happened. Divided among yourself and divided from each other. Until you unify as one, you will remain under the gun. In a society that can split the atom, travel to the moon, and clone a living cell. Yet there's more poverty, hate, and disease than ever before. Stick your head out of the window and scream. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
All right.
Tick, tick, tick. The moving finger writes, and having writ, none of thy piety nor wit shall ever erase a line of it. Miss Shirley Simmons and Time.
Time keeps on ticking, ticking into the future. You know, you can buy time, but you can't sell time. And time, it waits for no one. And sometimes you can't keep up with time. And most of the time, time flies by. And time again, you'll do the same thing. And if you don't have the time, try and make the time. If you can't make the time, at least find the time. 'Cause time keeps on slipping, slipping into the future. Remember summertime when the living was easy and not that easy anymore. No, it's not that easy anymore. Time and time will waste time. And time is precious. So don't waste my time. Now don't ask me the time when you see I don't have the time. 'Cause time is not on my side. And at that time, brother dear, I wouldn't give you the time of day. Since time goes by so quickly, it's best not to let time get away. Oh, you'll wonder, where did the time go? So, if you can't keep up with time, just watch your time. Does anybody really care, where did the time go? Time keeps on slipping, slipping into the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Shirley. Now I'm going to give Jeff Norman from the Western Project a comment, the last comments.
I'll just pick up where Shirley left off and say that the plight of veterans is the story of our times, and the time is now to find housing for all veterans.
Thank you, Jeff. I would like to thank our in-house studio guest, Jeff Norman from the Veterans Project, and Shirley Simmons from Soul Vision, and a special thanks to Jeremy and the Skid Row Studios. Also, Sister C on the line. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and I leave you with the song that opened the show, I'm Coming Home by Clifton Chenier.
I know she do.